Have you found yourself in a moment where you have no clue what you want to do?
Welcome to the Behind the Billboard podcast, a living, breathing, interactive conversation about getting better as a leader, a team, and as a person. We believe that success is all about people, and we're on a mission to help you grow. Here's your host, Chris Lindahl.
As business leaders, we all have personal brands. Would you like a few tips and tricks that you can use today to elevate your PR strategy? If so, you're in luck. I had the honor of interviewing Christy Peel, the CEO and founder of Media Mindfield. They simply do PR differently. They are news ninjas. There were so many takeaways that I took from this interview. Christy's just an amazing human being. And if you're a business leader looking to go to the next level, you do not want to miss this episode. Christy is crystal clear on how to lead a company and really what's going to get their company to the next level. So I hope you enjoyed the interview just as much as I did. This is going to be exciting. Let's go back to the beginning before you launched this company. Like, what happened?
Right. Well, thanks for having me here. It's really fun to talk with you like this. In 2008, I was at the pinnacle, I thought, of my television career. I was a TV reporter, had been for 12 years, worked at five different stations. I had just received a couple of Emmys, which was amazing. I actually was in a full page picture in a local magazine in Minneapolis. I was negotiating my contract. I had done a little bit of national work for Good Morning America. Things were going great. And I got called in and was part of a massive layoff. And I was in my mid-30s and suddenly was asking myself, what do you want to be when you grow up? A position I never thought I would be in.
So what happened next?
So I knew immediately that it was time for a change. I love media. I'm passionate about news. I believe it has so much power and possibility. And yet I knew that the way that I had been thinking about news when it came to being a reporter, I was a mother at this time and still am. And I knew that it didn't fit with my life anymore. And I didn't know what to do because traditional public relations is what a lot of former news folks go into. And I had never been impressed with the traditional public relations mindset when it came to securing earned media, the kind of media you get because of your expertise, because of your product, not because you're paying for it. And there was a disconnect. So I really took time away and spent time with my kids and just figured me out again. And it was hard. I mean, I was on unemployment. It was hard. I volunteered a lot. I took a very part-time job at my church. I just needed to know who I wanted to be when I grew up and what I was gifted to do. And I knew news fit into that. So after a year and a half of volunteering, reading, doing some assessments, really understanding how I'm wired, I took a class at my church about how to connect your gifts and passions with helping others, because that was what I was missing. How can news help people, especially in this environment when we hear fake news and we hear media is bad and bias and all of these things? And some of that is true for sure. But I knew there was good that could happen. And so about 3 weeks into the class, the question was asked, what do you know well enough that you could teach someone else? And I know news. And I wrote on my paper, I'm starting a company. My husband was in New York working at the time. And I called him and said, I'm starting a company. I mean, I'm an English major, no business plan, none of the things that I thought you needed to do to start a company. And within 30 days, I was legal in the state of Minnesota to be a company.
When you're in that moment of no clue what you want to do, you started volunteering and networking, and I really, really enjoy that part of your story, because I think too often, like, when we're in moments of struggle or we're not clear on our vision of where we're going, the best thing you can do is go help other people and go do things or acts of good to get you in a better place mentally. And it's fascinating when you do those kind of things, what starts to show up. And so when I read that about your story, like, I would say that was probably the thing that stuck out to me the most, because that's where you really start to get clarity. So you mentioned something that I really like is you had no background in running a business or anything else. So you start this company, and obviously, as we know, in any business, there are challenges along the way. They don't go away. There's different. Okay, so you open for business. Then what happens?
Right. So I guess I had a couple of really great things working in my favor. I had amazing people around me who were saying, do it. I had a friend who's going to be an employee in about a week, and she was saying, I know graphic design, I know branding, you need a logo, you need a website. And I was saying, oh no, I'm going to do this from my kitchen table. I'm just going to word of mouth. Like, no, I don't need any of that. And so I had the people around me pushing, you can do more, you can do more. And that was mind blowing and game changing for me. The other thing is that once I told just a couple people what I was doing, then they started saying, oh, I know someone who needs your help. I know this person. And at the beginning, I really wanted to focus on nonprofits because I knew that nonprofits had some incredible stories to tell and did not know how to tell them or who to tell them to. And I realized after doing, and we still have nonprofit clients, and now we give them away or offer a discount because I do have such a heart for the work that they're doing. But you can't build a business with the unpredictability of nonprofits as your base. Yeah. So I learned that within about 6 months.
Yeah.
But it, man, it's good for the soul. And you know, when I was unemployed, I could have thrown a pity party. And there were days where, you know, you go literally for me from Good Morning America 1 year later, folding the church bulletin.
Yeah.
Like that could mess with your mind.
For sure.
I just refused to let it. I just felt really grateful that I got to realize my kids and being healthy and all the things that I had. And it was the economic downturn. So people were losing their homes and it wasn't an easy time of my life. But yet it was an awesome time because I really got clear on what mattered. And I knew that if my business failed, my life was still fine. In fact, when people talk to me about whether they should quit their job, man, it is such a good thing for actually to happen. Not because it all worked out for me, but because you really can take a step back and say, boy, these are the things I'm really grateful for.
Right.
And that was the gift in the whole experience is that the business didn't need to work and I was still successful.
At our company, we have our number one core values, be generous, and our time, treasure, and talents. And the one that is least talked about now is the treasures or like the money. And I think we're so caught up in like, we need this job, we need this money. And it's like, there's so much more that we can do in this world to make an impact. And so I love that you just shared that. Okay. So you start the company, you're working nonprofits. Are you working these nonprofits by yourself?
Yeah. You know, I knew that from my TV experience that traditional public relations has a flaw. So I set out to fix it. So I didn't want to take on any real clients until I figured out how do I get them from, okay, I have a good story to tell, to I'm doing a news interview, to I'm going to do something with that should influence their donors, should make some kind of impact. Media is, as you know, time consuming, takes practice, takes coaching, all these different things. But if you do it just for the sake of doing it, you're wasting your time. It should be done with a purpose. It should be done so that you can increase your brand, increase your visibility. There's reasons to do it, as you know. So it really was, okay, how do I go from step one, step two, step three, in powerful, impactful media? So I gave that away. I just figured it out,
yeah.
Messed around with it until I got to a very specific process. And we now have protected that. We've named it. It's called Newsability. It's the same process. It works. We have 100% success rate. All of our clients we've ever worked with have received press. My team is amazing. They took that idea, and that's what good teams do, right? They take an idea and they go, okay, we can make it better. And so it really was giving it away and messing around with it.
So you mentioned team, which is the most important part of it. We can't get to where we are today without the help of amazing people, whatever company you're with. That's what I was asking you at the beginning. So you have the nonprofits, and then at some point you have to start hiring people. What were those first hires for you? What types of positions were you hiring?
Well, this is where it gets crazier, I guess. I lived it, so it doesn't seem that crazy. But
yeah.
Within about a year, word spread that what I was doing was different and that it was working. And my clients were getting press and they were seeing results. And so we got a couple of for-profit clients. And it was going well. And yet I was getting busier than I wanted to be because I still had this, my kids are little, they're only going to be little. I don't want to really be working full time yet. And I didn't know what I was going to do. And I had someone heard me speak. And she wanted to have coffee and she just moved to town, similar background as mine, television background. And I thought we were talking about where our kids were going to get haircuts. And I could tell her, you know, where the best place to go grocery shopping is, that kind of stuff. And literally on my way to Caribou, I called my husband and I said, I'm getting too busy. I don't want to be this busy yet, but I have a new business. I don't feel like I should say no. And he's like, oh, we'll figure it out, right? So I go have coffee with her. We have our conversation. I kind of tell her, I'm like, oh, this is my idea. This is what I'm doing. I never put two and two together. She sends me an email that night about midnight. I think I need to work for you. It never dawned on me to hire people. Yeah. I just didn't see myself as an entrepreneur or an employer. I just didn't. And when I speak now to, you know, young entrepreneurs, and especially women, I tell them, man, dream bigger.
Yeah.
Think bigger, push yourself. And thank goodness Andrea said, raised her hand first. Okay, I see where you're going. I want to get on board. She's still with the company. And the folks who have come after her in the media coaching roles are all former either TV reporters, producers, news decision makers. We have several differentiators, but that's one of them.
Yeah. You know, there are a lot of business leaders that listen to this podcast who are moms. And so you mentioned that you were getting a bit busier than you wanted to be. What advice would you give for like balance? Like how did you start to balance this out? Because obviously being a mom is super important to you. Like what advice could you give to those that are listening that might be struggling a little bit with that balance?
I think the term balance in general is wrong because we think about, okay, I'm always going to have this equal balance. There is no equal balance. No. And it's also frustrating to me that women and men get different treatment. I mean, your daughter's very important to you. Mm-hmm. So it bugs me a little bit that when we have the conversation, women struggle with this more because there's lots of dads out there that really want to be present. So for me, it was about what are my non-negotiables? Mm-hmm. What am I not willing to change? I knew that when I was in television, I remember going to cover a tornado. No one knew I was pregnant. And yet I knew I was pregnant and they were sending me to wherever, which is fine, but the photographer wasn't going to stop to get me water or go to the bathroom. It's like, dude, pull over. I'm pregnant.
Yeah.
And I was laying in bed in this hotel room in God knows where thinking, gosh, I hope I don't lose my baby because I haven't slept and I barely eat. And I thought, what is wrong with this? So that's a really extreme example. And that's the news business. And I love the news business and I'm not ripping on the news business. So I really then when I came to, okay, now I'm going to have an employee. And I'm going to have more employees. How do I want to treat them? Mm-hmm. How can I think about their families in a holistic way? Yeah. Because what happens at home comes to work and likewise. And me, I have to model it. It's really easy for me to say to folks, right, I know I own the company, so I got to work late. You go to your kid's basketball game. If I'm not modeling it, they're not going to do it either. So that's what kind of keeps me honest because I could certainly go down that workaholic path. Easy.
For sure. Yeah. Your point about balance was spot on. And I think a lot of times people do forget that there's also fathers that have to make sacrifices as well. It seems to me like I'm just judging this based on my organization, which is a smaller sample size than obviously the entire country. But a lot of times it's the moms that feel what I've seen more guilt.
The mom guilt.
Yes. The mom guilt.
We put it on ourselves.
Yeah.
We put it on ourselves. I was at a retreat last year and a gentleman talked with us. And one of the things that he said, one of his pieces of advice that I took was ask the people who are most important in your life if they're getting the best of you. And then if they say no, ask them what that looks like. But be prepared for the answer.
Right.
Because if you're going to ask, you better be willing to deal with the answer.
Right.
So I did it. I went home and I asked my husband and I asked both of my sons, are you getting the best of me? And my youngest son said no. And I said, okay, what would it mean if you were getting the best of me? And he said, can you pick me up from school once a week? Totally. Absolutely I can. But had I not asked him, I wouldn't have known that that was the thing that he wanted because a lot of the moms and a lot of the dads are picking the kids up after school and they're not going to after school care. Fine, buddy. And it's important to him that I do pick him up.
What a great question. That's helpful for a lot of people to just ask that question. You said you have to be prepared for the answer because I think that's one thing as I look at the growth as myself as a person, but also as a leader, asking those tough questions and being willing to hear the answers is not always easy.
Right. Because if you don't want to hear the answer, don't ask the question. Right. You can't be mad at the answer.
Right. Okay. So we're talking about like, you know, that question has obviously helped you become a better mother, but they're intertwined. Like you had said earlier, I mean, like this work-life balance thing that everyone talks about doesn't really exist. I mean, I get home and I'm still working and I would call that personal time, but it's really not personal time. And they're intertwined. And so when you look at your organization, you have some special things that you've done and that you've mentioned a little bit about it already, but what things are you doing differently to help people in their personal life and as well as their professional life?
Sure. We talk about family first. For me, that's my children, my husband. Some folks choose not to have kids. So it's their significant other. It's their pets. Mm-hmm. If your child is sick or your spouse is sick and you need to take them to the doctor, that is paid time off. Same for your pets. Your pet is sick, paid time off. You love your fur baby. Like I love my little babies. That's fine. So we really try to be inclusive. We give paid time off for moms and dads the same when they have new babies or adopt. We allow people to bring their babies into the office until the baby is mobile. It's a great way to transition back in. It helps with the daycare costs. Everybody loves having a baby around. And we've had every parent that's taken advantage of that policy has done it a little bit differently. But we're willing as a company to take a conference room, turn it into a nursery. You bring in your own crib and all that sort of thing. And we feel like if our clients are uncomfortable with hearing a baby perhaps on the other side of the phone or having a baby in a meeting, then they might not be right fit clients either. Certainly if the baby is having a meltdown, the parent is so aware and always removes that baby. And we've never had an issue. We've never had had a complaint. We have unlimited vacation and we haven't had issues with that either. In fact, our biggest issue is that we have to force some people to take vacation.
right. Oh yeah.
Because if people are aligned with your core values and they're passionate and love what they do, they don't want to leave.
Right.
And so we really have that flexibility mindset of, gosh, if it's a snow day and it's going to be 2 hours to get into work, if you're listening to this somewhere warm, just enjoy the warmth because this is about to become our reality here.
Yeah.
But I really want people spending their time used well, and I want them to get home and be able to give their best to whoever it is they're going home to and then come back the next day and give what they've got to us at the company. We also have, I'm really passionate about learning and developing people. I tell everyone, I want them to leave whenever they leave the company to be a better person than their first day. I want them to leave a better person than when they walked in. I tell everybody that on their first day, and I'm passionate about it. So we have a book club. So people pick a book and read about it. We have a leadership development school that I wrote and developed that our leaders take and go through, and there's papers and assignments and books and that sort of thing. We have open door day once a quarter where all the executive team, we have our calendars completely cleared. We open our door and have snacks in to bribe people to come visit us. And they can talk about whatever. You know, you want to show me pictures of your baby? Awesome. You want to talk about something bugging you? Fine. I just want folks to know that there's an open door. And we have every Friday an anonymous survey that everyone in the company takes. How did they stack up against our core values? How did the executive team stack up against the core values? And is there anything that the executive team could have done positively or negatively that impacted their job? So every week we're getting anonymous feedback that we can then make decisions about. And then Monday mornings, we start with an standing all-company meeting. And every team shares their weekly wins. Any team that has any kind of challenge, we share it. We try and brainstorm together. We give core value awards, and someone wins an all-expenses paid trip for two every year. So we are always nominating each other for core values awards. So we do a lot because I just feel like employing people is such a privilege, and we can influence for good someone's life, and I don't take that lightly.
That was incredible. That was literally incredible, and I think that's going to provide amazing resources to so many people that I can see why your company is so successful. And I think a lot of times, and it's exactly why I titled this entire podcast Behind the Billboard, because a lot of people don't see behind the marketing. They don't see behind all of the things that you do. And all of those things that you just shared led you up to an award that you've received. And so tell me a bit about that award and what that means to you and your company.
The Inc. Award?
Yes.
It's so fascinating. A client of mine told me that I should apply for one of the fastest growing companies in America, the Inc. 5000 Award. And I thought, well, that's ridiculous. We're not that big. And he said, the event is amazing. You should go just apply for the event. So we took the time, we applied. And because we're a privately owned company, I've never given numbers. And to apply for this award, you have to give your numbers for them to consider. And your accountant needs to verify the numbers. And, you know, based on his advice, we applied. I was shocked that we made the list. It was the most amazing few days to go to that event and to hear the speakers, the founder of Panera, Kendra Scott Jewelry, Casper Mattresses, Brene Brown, Gretchen Rubin. It was just one speaker after another. And to be around entrepreneurs that all want to grow and get better, that kind of energy, it's unexplainable.
I followed all of your social posts, so it was like really fun to watch the journey of you being down there. Congratulations for that.
Thank you.
Super, super exciting.
Thank you.
And then you also have this other award, which is the best places to work. And so all of those things that you share that you do for your company, and it's not just you, obviously, it's your leadership and your entire organization. But tell me what those types of awards mean to the company.
We've won the best places to work several years in a row.
And I know you have.
It's always such a joy because I don't get to vote. It's not like I'm stacking the deck. You know, everybody votes. All the employees vote. They're asked questions. And I know you can pay to get all of the answers. You know, you can pay to get all the answers. I don't, because I really don't. I tell people it's anonymous. Please be honest. I don't want to breach that trust. And when we win, it's just, it means so much because I really want to create a work environment that I want to work at. And I've got pretty high standards.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So if I'll work there, then yeah, yeah. I think other people will want to work there too. And that's an award that means more to me than the other award.
It's obviously all about your team. And what you had mentioned is the leadership training that you had wrote. And along the way, you didn't really have any experience being a leader.
No. So
what things have you done throughout the years to help yourself become better prepared and a better leader for your company, for your family, and really for everyone that's a part of your life?
I'm glad you asked, because I think that there's a misnomer, and I believed it, that leaders are created in master's programs. Now, I love that people go to master's programs and have business degrees. I love that. My message to entrepreneurs is you don't have to have it. Doesn't mean drop out of school. It just means whatever path you're on, don't let your degree or your bank account hold you back. So for me, because I was a journalist, I firmly believed and knew, like any story, okay, I don't have the answers. I have to go seek out the experts. So I brought that into my mindset about leadership. I don't have any of what it takes except a desire and a passion around what I do. Therefore, I have to go seek out advice. So I read a lot. I'm a crazy reader, 50, 60 books a year, podcasts, books, I just love to consume information and apply what works into my company and learn and also share, because there's that be generous piece is,
yeah.
If I've learned this and I can share it with other people, my goodness, I feel like even sharing my story, if that one person feels like, all right, if she did it, I can do it, then that's what it's all about. So it's about reading. It's about consuming information and seeking out help. So we've occasionally hired consultants. We've occasionally gone out there. We implemented EOS. I was a few years into the company and realized, like, oh, my goodness, I really got something here. This is kind of the market needs this, and our approach is so different. And you can't tell your employees you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
They need to think you do.
Yeah.
So I got into a group. I'm with four other entrepreneurs. They're all men, which is awesome. And we get together every month for most of a day. We go on retreats out of town. We're all very like-minded. I also am now part of a C200 protege group, which is a group of women from around the country. There's eight of us. It's a learning program. I'm part of WPO in town, Women's President's Organization. Yeah. That's fantastic. So it's really about being with other people, and not for the purpose of getting business or trying to get something or putting them on an email list. Like, there's a place for all of that, but really to come with like the vulnerable, this is what I'm struggling with. Can you help me, and let me help you?
Women in leadership in our organization, like, I'm actually the only male in our leadership team, and it's the most important thing to me. And so I love interviewing really strong women and what you've done. And I love how humble you are about, like, I don't know. And I mean, you do know something at this point. Like, you've built an amazing company.
Thank you.
What was great about what you just shared there is I think too many people go in trying to take value initially, trying to take deposits out of these groups, like networking. I can't stand. I go in trying to like learn and trying to like help share what struggles I've had so that people don't make those same mistakes. And too many people show up in groups and organizations, and maybe not the ones you're in, looking to network and short-sighted and like, how do I get business out of that? The ROI of investing and growing your brain is far more significant than one transaction or one opportunity. So what types of things have you learned in these organizations?
So much. Just some of it is the actual, you know, I've done in this in my company from, okay, I'm thinking about getting more new space. Should I move? Should I not? Tactical. And these people that I'm in these groups with, they know a lot about my business. I mean, they've been under the hood. They've kicked it around. They know some things. Also, I think there's some more, some things that they've taught me about myself. I do have permission to share this, because what happens in these groups is confidential.
Yeah, of course.
But I was with the four men that I'm with. We've been together almost 5 years, as I mentioned. And I would always say to them, I don't know why you guys keep me here. Like, am I your token woman? You guys are amazing. Why am I here? And they'd always say, come on, Christy, of course you belong here. And I didn't believe it. It was a worthiness. It was all, I mean, there's many imposter syndrome, whatever. And so we were at a dinner last spring and one of the gentlemen said, all right, we all know each other so well. What's the one thing we don't know yet? Everyone share that one thing, right? And so we go around the room and I get to me, I'm like, I said, I really don't know why you guys have me here. I don't belong with you guys. You're so successful. And the gentleman got very stern with me and he said, listen, do you respect us? And I said, of course. And he said, so either we're lying to you or you need to leave the group. In that minute, it was like, oh my goodness, I've been spending so much time thinking that I don't belong here that I've missed out. Mm-hmm. And just having the confidence in that has just made such an impact. And also in some of the other groups that I'm in, there's an asking for help element that I think some folks get into groups expecting to be handed things. And not even, sometimes it's business, but sometimes, okay, now you tell me what I need to learn. No, you need to go and ask specifically. I'm struggling here. How can you help me? Or do you know someone who can? And be authentic about it. Through my C200 group, I met a woman who agreed to be my mentor. She is the former president of CBS,
wow,
which is amazing. Liz Tumulty, I would have never crossed paths with her otherwise. I specifically reached out to her and said, I'd love to learn your perspective on how media is changing because I, as the owner of this company, need to be five steps ahead of what the industry is doing. And you've seen it at a much bigger level than I've seen it and made decisions about station ownership and buyouts and all those sorts of things. I need to understand it. And within 10 minutes of talking to me, she said, okay, I totally get what you're doing. You're the right person. It's the right time. I'm going to mentor you. And we talk every other week. She's amazing. She's connected me to some people. And when I met her for the first time, I was very emotional. And I said, I can't accept this. What your time must be worth. I can't pay for that. And she took her hands and put it on my face. And she said, honey, just give it to someone else. And so in the last week, I was able to make the gift to someone in town and she accepted. So now I'm mentoring someone. And she said, I'm going to pay you back because I'm going to give it to someone else.
That's
and so
great.
I went back to Liz and I called her and I said, I'm doing it for someone else and she's going to do it for someone. And you're one thing. Think of how many people it can impact.
That's such a great story.
I think it's going in with the right kind of mindset.
That's an amazing story. Entrepreneurship and leadership can become very lonely too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, and then you start to develop the thought like no one else understands. They don't know what I'm going through. And so that's why like those groups are so important because like you said, they understand what's under the hood. They understand what's actually happening in your organization and you understand their organizations. And like, that's really important to get people to have that perspective because if you're a trendsetter or you're trying to change the way things are done, you don't always make a lot of friends within the industry when you're doing things that way.
No, it's funny right? about that. No, you don't. And it's hard because you can't, I've got some great friends, clients and relationships, but I'm not going to call Chris Lindahl and be like, hey, I'm really struggling with this employee. Like, what do you think? Like, you need to think I have it all together too, right? So I got to find some people that I can like figure some stuff out with. And also in the time we've been together, boy, kids have been sick. People have moved. Businesses have sold. We've talked so many personal and professional things because they go together that it's such a gift to have relationships like that. To, you know, I can call them and say, oh my goodness, this is happening. What should I do? And they'll say, all right, give us 10 minutes. We'll get everybody on the phone. You know, people need that. And I think the reason more people don't is because we like to put on a facade that we got it all together. We know what we're doing.
Yes.
No need for help here. Nothing to see. But boy, we all need it.
Well, it's sort of like social media where, you know, we compare our entire life to someone's front end. You know,
yes.
We see their front end. Everything looks perfect. Like they're such a great father, such a great mother, or, you know, their job is to look like everything's together. And then we put like this guilt on ourselves. Why can't we be at their level? And I think so many times we compare ourselves to maybe another business as a leader, but we're only seeing the front end of their business. We don't understand the challenges that they're going through.
No. And even little things like, okay, now we've self-financed. At the beginning, it was self-financed. It was like, okay, I need to print some business cards and get a website. That's less than $100. And then by the time you go, okay, well, is debt a good thing? Because I was always taught debt is a bad thing. Who am I going to ask about this? I mean, it's the little things. Mm-hmm. And even also, I don't think entrepreneurs, and I include myself in this, take enough time to celebrate. And we got to have people we can celebrate with. I have, since developing all of this, I have some very close girlfriends. I have some very close guy friends, and they will celebrate with me for all the right reasons and likewise.
that's great advice. I actually talked about this on a previous episode on the Behind the Billboard about successful leaders are always chasing something they can't catch, and they never really enjoy where they are. And they always feel like they're just getting started, and they're never really still, and they're never really present. And so for me, like, it's really important to be still and be present now. Like, that's a really big challenge for me because I'm always wanting to be somewhere else. I'm always wanting to be the next level. I'm always chasing something I can't catch. And I wrote down just to slow down and enjoy the ride. And I'm really trying to just enjoy where we are today, where we're going, and celebrate the people that are along with me. You know, I mean, it's really important. I think we do have to slow down a little bit and celebrate. Now, the challenge, like you had mentioned, sometimes some of your victories aren't things that maybe you can celebrate publicly. Maybe yes. There are certain entrepreneurs that understand what you're celebrating. And sometimes we can't find enough people to relate to that celebrate some of those victories.
Absolutely. And it's also so important to be in a place where you're completely safe and where people will call you out and you want to be called out. Because I think it's very common to build organizations where people still are going to filter what they're giving you. They might not give you the whole truth. They give you what you want to hear. Do they really want me to ask about how their spouses are doing? Are they doing? I mean, like, it's so hard to know because yeah. Are people liking me because of my name is on their check? It's a weird place to be in. And I'm not saying it's a bad place to be in. It's just a weird place to be in.
Yeah, it takes a long time to get comfortable with it, you know, and especially when you're the CEO and founder and your name's on everything. I mean, it's different than, you know, the early days. And now you're liable. You're on the hook. I mean, you're responsible for pretty much every single action that happens in your organization.
And people, you know, and I still don't really appreciate this, I don't think, but my words have a different weight to people. When I say something, they listen to it in a different way. They think about it in a different way. I have to be much more careful with my words, with the organization than I did in the early years when it was like me and a few people figuring it out, you know, because people who have come on board now, they only know me like this. They don't know me as the person that's sitting at the kitchen table going, I don't know, what do you think?
Yeah.
So they only know this company, we've got a great office, we've got this great culture. They only know me as this, and that's what they signed up for. So I got to keep that in the front of my mind as well.
Yeah.
Because they deserve a leader that these people are amazing, where they're coming from, their potential. They deserve a leader who can bring them to the next level.
As leaders, too, we're always on stage with our words and our actions. I mean, I think about, you know, President of the United States. Whatever the President of the United States does or says has an impact on so many different things. The economy, the NASDAQ, the housing market, whatever is said. I mean, you think about the feds, they say something that might happen, might not happen. It impacts the markets. And so it's the same thing as a leader. What we do, it makes an impact not only on the people in our organization, but their families, our clients' families. I mean, there's so many families that are involved in every decision we make. So if you're a leader and you're listening, make sure that you really understand the impact that you have on people, because it can be very positive. And if you do something that's not so great, it can be very negative.
Absolutely. You know, last week we were supposed to have help days. So we close down the office, we all go and we volunteer someplace. And there was a little mix up in the scheduling with a nonprofit, and it was an accident. But it meant that we're on the west side of the Twin Cities, and it meant that we would be finishing up at 5 o'clock in St. Paul. And I pulled us out of it because I thought, my goodness, we've got people picking up daycare. Spouses are switching their work around. I get it. We're doing something really good for the community. But we can reschedule that. Let's reschedule that, because they're going to do it. If I'm saying we're going to all go do this amazing thing, they're going to do it, like it or not. And it is so important, because you are on stage. People are listening and people are watching.
Help days. That's incredible. Okay. So someone in your company said something that really...
We're going there. Yeah, we're going there.
We'll go. You said nothing's off limits. So here we go.
We'll go there. Nothing off limits.
So you said you can do whatever you want, but no one will want to work here. And it stuck with me, because I look at the early days of my company and I remember decisions that I was potentially going to make, and I was making them, and I wasn't even 100% certain why I was making them, other than I thought that was the direction. But to your point, like you said earlier, you're not at the beginning anymore where you have just a few people. Every decision you make impacts a lot of people and their families. And so what happened when that came up?
So Mark, who's our COO now, this was a couple years into the company. And to this day, neither one of us can remember what we were talking about. But we were in a closed door meeting talking about some kind of policy. And I am more restrained now and am more controlled, because I generally, and we just took another company assessment and it confirmed it again. Like, I move fast. I got a lot of words. We're going. I'm on to the next idea. I mean, that's just all
visionary.
I'm all there. And that means that sometimes I don't think about impact to people. Mm-hmm. And so I made some decision and I said it, and Mark goes, that's fine. We can do that. No one will want to work here. And the reason that I love that he said it is that he was right, and it made me think, and he said it. I love that he isn't a yes person, because if not, someone has to keep me in check. And those words have stuck with me, and they're so important, because I could do whatever. We could make whatever kind of policies we wanted, but I don't want a place where people don't want to be. Mm-hmm. I want them to bring their best self to work and their best self home, and that's on me.
Yeah. When I read that, the thing that came to mind, and I think it's one of the most critical pieces of leadership, is trust. He had your trust to be able to say that. There are a lot of organizations where they don't have someone that will tell them no, or they have someone that will challenge them. And if you're in an environment as a leader where you don't have any checks and balances and you're a visionary, that's a super dangerous place to be in your organization. And so that trust piece when I read it, I was like, I like that, because there's a trust associated with him being able to tell Christy directly, like, this is how I feel.
Yes. And it is so true, because I tell people, Mark, my leadership team, don't tell me what I want to hear. You're the only people that I know and expect to be completely honest with me. Not all of my ideas are good.
Even though you think they are.
In the minute, they're amazing.
They're all amazing.
But that doesn't mean we should do them.
Right.
So if, like, the more clear I get about how I'm wired, I can do all the ideas. I can hear, you know, when we talk about it with the whole company, I'm in an island way over here and Mark is on the ship and I want the right people on that ship with him. And then he's got to figure out with the other leaders how to get there.
Yeah.
And then when they get kind of close to me, I'm going to jump to the next island.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the path, because if we have the Ralph Waldo Emerson quote several places in my office, I love it. Do not go where the path may lead. Go instead where there is no path and leave a trail. And that's what
we were
trying to do. Leave a trail. I want it to be easier for the people to come after us. But man, we're out there in the woods sometimes with knives, hacking stuff down, Rambo style.
I just picture that.
Yeah, right. Come with bleeding, right? And that's the fun of building something.
Right. Take credit for where you're at, because it's really phenomenal. I mean, I've interviewed a lot of business leaders, and it's really, really fascinating what you've built and the person that you are. So you mentioned earlier your business model is unique in the sense of, like, the former news reporters and the way that you do things. And one of your core values is to be a news ninja. And then you mentioned earlier 100% placement rate, which is absolutely phenomenal. And then I read something about you had a story about how to pitch a story, which has changed too. Maybe share a little bit about, like, your strategy on how you're hiring people, what type of people you're bringing in, and then how you get 100% placement rate and how to pitch a story.
Which is it's all crazy.
I feel like, to me, it's kind of all wrapped into one, especially with my experience with your organization, which has been phenomenal. Like, they're all sort of connected.
Right. Well, thank you.
Yes.
You can't win the news game if you don't know the rules. And unless you've been an active journalist, you don't know the rules. And it's little things. When it's pitching the news, man, when I was working in media and all the stations I was at, pizza would show up from someone who wanted press or cookies. And honestly, no one asked who brought the food. They just ate it.
Yeah.
So, like, sending swag to places, unless you're in Minnesota, it just happened. The Timberwolves released their brand new Prince-inspired jerseys. Okay, that thing is sweet. I'm sure that they sent it around and it probably made news.
For
and
sure.
It's totally worthy. The pizza that Chris Lindahl Real Estate wants to send is not going to get him news. The reason that Chris is going to get news is because he's a real estate genius who is worthy of being an expert in that space.
Well, just to add something really quick to that, I actually tried to get media before I hired your company and it didn't work. So I can relate to the swag that doesn't make any sense, trying to send emails to random reporters, going online and trying to see what I can't remember the sites, Haro or whatever, it's like different pitches on there and trying to respond to them and never getting a response. So I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I've lived on the other side of this. That's why it's really enjoyable to listen to what you're sharing here.
I love that you're an advocate, an evangelist for us. It's knowing, okay, what time, whether it's print, and we talk about TV because that's where I live, but it's a lot of our clients get print and radio and online and blogs, and we do some influencer work with social media and that kind of thing. But it's really about knowing what we think about going into the reporters or the news decision maker's shoes and thinking like them. If we give them what they want, our clients win every time. So, okay, right now we know that should you sell your house over the holidays? That might be something that people are wondering. So therefore, there might be writers and folks on the radio and folks on TV that might be thinking about that kind of story, but they don't have time to figure out what does the study say? What is the research? They're doing 100 things since I've got out of news. There's more website writing those reporters are doing. Twitter, they better be on Snapchat. I mean, all these things. So they have a lot to do. So if we can deliver them good content, you're going to go on there and you're not going to give a commercial because you're going to give them your expertise. You're going to mention the name of your company, which helps you. You're going to be good. You're going to be well coached. They're going to get great content. So it's really about giving them what they want, the media. We need them to trust us. And we've built that up after this much time that we're coming to them because we feel like these people actually are worthy of a story. And we don't take clients that we don't think are newsworthy. This 100% placement rate kind of happened by accident. We started and I was like, do you know that all of the clients we've ever worked with have received press? Like, we should probably market that.
Yeah, no kidding.
And here we are. We've had our clients, I checked before I left, have had over 3,600 news interviews this year.
Wow.
And our big audacious goal is over the 5-year period to have 20,000 news interviews by our clients. And we have a counter, like a digital counter in our office going so that whenever the coaches schedule a news interview anywhere in the country, they're pinging that. And it's super fun for them because we all have to work together. We couldn't ever reach these goals alone. It takes everyone working together, everyone going in the right direction, everyone being on board, the right kind of clients, the right kind of mindset. It works together, to your point. And all of us love news. Like when people are out there, the fake news, like we see the good, we see what's possible. And social media has taken us to a whole nother level because it can be leveraged, which you do a great job at. And we are getting more and more clients where we're handling their social media, just the messaging, because we get the storytelling. And at some level as a leader, you don't have time,
right?
But you've got stuff to say.
For sure. And leaders are in positions where there are interviews at all times and they're not always in the news. They could be, like you said, they could be print, they could be social media. What are some really big mistakes that you've seen leaders make when it comes to PR?
Sure. I'm going to put you on the spot. Okay.
Here we go.
All right. My turn. Okay. You know the CEO at Amazon?
Yes.
Bezos, right? Who's the CEO at UPS?
Yeah. No idea.
We don't know.
No idea.
Because I use this, I don't look it up. So I don't know if it's a man or a woman. I have no idea. I know that there's a leader. That person isn't out there.
Right.
Get out there.
Right. Yeah.
The leaders that say that they don't have time, boy, their employees want to interact with them. If they're leading in some fashion, they've got a point of view. It should be out there. They have an expertise. They have something that the world wants to see. And what really pains me is that when people say, man, I got a good story to tell, but the press don't tell it because all they want to do is bad stuff or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, have you ever tried? Have you ever told them your story? Have you ever tried to connect with them in a meaningful way? Have you ever given them something besides a press release, which, spoiler alert, all go in the garbage? So it's about a misunderstanding. And I think it's just easy to blame media right now. That's the environment we live in. But boy, they want to tell good stories. They just need the content.
Yeah.
And so I think the mistake leaders make is believing that either they don't have the time. And if you are, I now talk when I speak about it, media Mad Libs, right? We all played Mad Libs. And, you know, there's blanks. It happens with the public, right? If you don't fill in the blank yourself, someone else is going to fill it in and it is not going to be positive. So if there is a void out there and you're not filling it in, what's out there isn't going to be positive.
I think the number one thing that is holding a lot of leaders back in pretty much everything in this world is fear. I actually personally know people that have been attempting to do maybe their own PR on social media, or maybe it's on TV, or there's a few opportunities that come along the way. And most people are freaked out. They are absolutely scared and they're fearful of being on camera, or they're fearful of being behind a mic, or they're fearful of doing a social media live or whatever it is. What types of things would you recommend to leaders that are just freaked out about being in those environments?
That's a great question. So over the course of the company, we currently have over 120 some clients. Like we've had lots of clients we've worked with over time. And all that time, we've had one person who got to a news station and threw up and couldn't do the interview. One person. He absolutely had a panic attack. I mean, it is not for everyone, but he certainly can do print interviews. There's some kind of something that can be done. I honestly think that, and easy for me to say, right? I did it for years, but I think that television interviews are actually easier than live speaking because you're looking at one person, maybe two people, and that's it. You forget.
You're not looking at an audience of 100,000 or a million people.
You don't realize that how many people are watching it. And it's really all about the coaching. It really saddens me when I hear that there are agencies out there that can get an interview and then just show up and the person does the interview. Everybody needs to be coached. Everybody needs practicing. You've done tons of media. You still get coached. I got coached, I'm not joking, yesterday for this interview today.
Yeah, I love it.
Because it's important. The people around you, ask them before you do any kind of interviews. We call it the verbal blankie. What do you say that's your filler word? And let's work to get rid of that. So we have, you know, little tricks. Every time you say or like or whatever it is, have someone clap so that you're aware. Because until you're aware of it, you're going to keep doing it. It's just feeling confident and going in there knowing the material. And the best advice, if you're going to do any kind of interview, it's not what you're asked. It's what you're saying. You control what comes out of your mouth. You can get asked whatever you want. You control what you say.
That's great. I love that you said the filler words. I have four filler words that I wrote down here today. Like 100%, I love that for sure, that I've been working on for a long time. And the reason I asked you that question about fear is obviously we all have it to some degree, whatever it is in our lives. And I look back to the early days of when I really started to try to become a good communicator. And I would sit in an office, I'd lock the door and I'd shoot 100 videos a day by myself. And every time I shoot a video, it was awful, by the way, I'd run out in the hallway and hope that someone wasn't listening in another office.
Right.
And I did that for years to try to get better. And even at the level that I'm at today, I feel like I continually get better. I did an interview that you guys lined up for me probably like 3 months ago, and I missed one word that maybe people didn't even know. It probably made sense to most, but I knew it wasn't perfect. And I was so upset with myself. I'm like, it was the first time in a long time where I've been in an interview where I made a mistake. Because I've put myself in such uncomfortable environments so many times where I've tried not to get that. Even if you practice, there's just times where it's not your A game and you know it. And sometimes others don't. And they might say, you know what, that was the greatest interview that I've ever heard, but you don't feel 100%. And I think those little setbacks are what create that fear where we never want to jump through it. I have friends in leadership where one thing went wrong, where maybe they were in front of a crowd or they said one thing or they got made fun of or someone said something on social media to them that really killed their dreams. And now they're fearful to ever step through that.
And it's a bummer, right? Because before you're doing what you're doing now, you had to sell your first house, right? Mm-hmm. And that probably didn't go very awesome, right?
Oh, no. I still remember that story.
I'm so grateful that my early days in news, YouTube was not a thing because there were some really ugly moments and you get through it, right? You have to just, you know, tomorrow is going to be a better day. I can do better tomorrow. I think we're our own worst critics. And I've told my kids this, and the older I get and the younger my employees get, I tell them the same thing.
That's good.
But just if someone told you that you had a blue face, would that make it true? No. Mm-hmm. You decide if it's true. And so at home, I'll tell the kids, like, blue face, like, just because someone said that about you, you decide if you're going to believe it or not. That doesn't make it instantly true. And I think you're right. It is fear. And it is, what if this happens or what if that? And, you know, we've had clients that have done not the best interviews, some interviews where we thought that they would never get asked back. So we coach them more and coach them more and coach them more. And so much of doing media is marketing. You know, you know this, right? You do it so that you can get the marketing asset and you can do something else with it. That's the huge value of earned media, attaching your brand to the brand of the news organizations. You can't buy that. And let's say you had a terrible interview. The worst that can happen is that for TV, most people are really the most afraid of television. You have a terrible interview. It's awful. You know, your grandma, your spouse, your significant other, your kid maybe saw it, right? Some people in the office might be talking, right? But you know what? You probably have a quote in there that you can use on social media and take a picture, and suddenly you're sitting next to whatever anchor and you still got something really positive out of it, and the next one will be better. But media is one of those things. That's why the company is called Media Mindfield. You can blow up your brand if you don't know what you're doing. If you can't afford an agency, boy, if you have an interview opportunity, say yes and then practice with your friends. Practice and practice and practice and practice. Find the person who's not your yes person, who doesn't isn't going to tell you that that ugly tie is like a great idea, and work on it. Work it through, and it gets better every time.
I've given permission to everyone around me to give me constructive feedback at all times. I'm okay with that. So he's going to listen to this. My podcast editor, Josh, I said, I want everything that I'm doing that you don't think is right. Like, I want to grow. And when you give people and empower people around you to help you become better, like, you have major breakthroughs. But sometimes if you don't give people permission, they're worried that maybe they're telling you no, or your example earlier with the quote. You have to empower people around you to allow them to criticize you, because obviously we're going to be our own worst critic. But we might not be criticizing ourselves in the right places, or we might have tunnel vision on what those filler words are. And so I think empowering people around us is really important as well.
Yeah, and because it comes from a place of, I want to be better.
Mm-hmm.
So to be better, you can help me. Please, I welcome the help.
So this has really changed from your days of when you were a news reporter, and it's social media. You've mentioned Facebook and Snapchat, and you know, you're glad that YouTube wasn't around back then. Social media can help us, and it can really hurt us. And I know this, I say this laughingly, because I've been in situations like this where I've had people try to suck me into environments where it would not be a good look if I replied or if I had a response one way or another. It just is a place where it's better to non-response. What are some tips or some tricks that leaders listening right now should do and should not do when it comes to social media?
Sure. I'm going to share a stat with you that I got out of Forbes recently, and it's going to blow your mind. 44% of a company's valuation is based on the online reputation of the CEO. And it makes sense. The Bezos thing, right? It does make sense.
When you say the CEO, here's what comes to mind right now. Your analogy of Bezos versus UPS was a great one. But the one that comes to mind that is far ahead of the rest is the T-Mobile CEO and his Sunday cook-offs that are on Facebook and social media. It looks like I could hang out with him. I could connect with him. He's wearing an apron and a hat, and he's cooking every Sunday, and he's in front of me every single weekend. I see those ads, and they're really good because it humanizes him as the CEO.
And we've now started handling, as I mentioned, some online messaging and handling the social accounts for some executives, because we've gotten really clear about a couple of things with them. They don't have the time, and yet they know that they need to be out there. And we also want to think about their blind spots, because T-Mobile, right? When you think about CEO, most people don't think large CEO hanging out, because that isn't necessarily what's put out there. So for our clients, and anyone can do this, define what stereotypes might be out there about you or someone like you. And then who are you? Because it's so important to be authentic. Like, if you ran into that guy right afterwards and he took off the t-shirt, put his tie back on, someone would call him out.
Right. That's right.
And to know the key messages you want to communicate, and only be on the platforms you can do well. Because if you're on all the platforms and you're not liking people's things, or you're not engaged, then you're essentially doing the, okay, no comment is a comment. If you put something out there and 100 people like it, and you're never saying anything else or ever engaging with it, now you're reinforcing the negative stereotypes about a CEO.
Right.
So if it's only LinkedIn, that's all you can do, no problem. Do it really well. And know the difference between public and private. Know if you want some people to see certain things, that's fine. Just be really aware of your settings, and really intentional about, if you're going to go out of town for a week and you can't check it, you need to have someone else who can look at your social. The thing that is amazing to me about social media that is absolutely true, if I took a flight 10 years ago on Delta and I hated it, I would never think to send or call the CEO of Delta. Now, that is exactly what people do.
Oh, yeah.
Last night, I had a really bad experience at a very well-known restaurant in town. The manager wasn't taking care of me, and it was really bad. And I got injured, actually. And she wasn't taking care of me. And I said, you know, I have one option. I'm going to go to social media. I posted something. And within 15 minutes, the owner direct messaged me, was very gracious. He knows that I'm loyal to that restaurant. And I took down my negative, because I wasn't trying to take his restaurant down. I was trying to get him to know that this could happen to someone else. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's wrong for me to tell everyone what restaurant that was and never tell him. He needs to know. Mm-hmm. And we had a wonderful exchange. I'm certain I will go back, because I know he's going to take care of the problem and it won't happen to someone else. So we now have to think about some of these different platforms as a direct line to whoever we want to talk to. And if you're going to be on that platform, you better engage. Yeah. Because I could have had that tweet and it could have sat there for days and probably would have gotten some retweets. And that would have been really damaging for the brand. So I think we have to just understand the power and impact of social media, the good and the bad, and use it. And when I was live tweeting from the Inc. 5000, I tweeted something that Ron, I'm going to butcher his last name, so I'm not going to try, the founder of Panera said. And he liked it while he was on stage. So more and more folks are having other people manage their social media because we can't expect that a CEO at that level would have that kind of time. But I suspect that someone on his team is looking at what's being out there on his behalf, just like it's not uncommon to have someone going through emails for someone else's behalf or answering a phone call. It's just a different world we live in.
Yeah, that's great advice. That's what people do now is they go to social media.
Yes.
Or they send a message. And I mean, even with this podcast, the amount of private messages and the amount of posts and comments that I'm receiving from leaders all over the country now, that's how connected you can be on social media. It's a great platform as long as you understand and respect how it's used. You mentioned something about the public versus the private. I've just taken a policy that I assume that every single thing is recorded and every single thing is screenshotted. I feel like every single thing that Chris Lindahl does, someone is going to see. And if I'm not willing for the public to see something, I don't do it. And that's just how I am. And I think that's the way that our society is just changing that way.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes back to your fear comment, people don't get on certain platforms because they're afraid of it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of teenagers who would love to spend some time with you. You could even throw $50 at a 15-year-old and they will happily teach you how Snapchat works.
Right.
And I think as parents, it's super important to know what our kids are doing, what platforms they're on. And that doesn't mean we have to be, you know, constantly talking to their friends on these platforms. They don't want that. And also we need to understand that our employees are on these platforms and they have a voice and they're the representatives of the brand on these platforms. And it's good to have some sort of policies around what is and isn't acceptable for people to write about the brand when they're representing you. Because if you don't talk about it, I think people would be shocked. It's not uncommon when I talk about this. We call it at our company Positive Online Presence or POP because it's important that people have a positive online presence. Many people still haven't Googled themselves. This is a tip. We did it all the time in news. But if you put quotes on either side of the words, you can see the exact phrase back. So you can put Chris Lindahl in without the quotes and you're going to see something.
Well, I've read some of them.
You shouldn't. I know you have. And it's really important to know what's out there about you. And then earned media and being active on social, some of the best ways to push the negative stuff down.
For me, what I love most about what you're doing and what it's done and how it's helped our brand is that we were really good at talking about ourselves, marketing and talking about how great we were. And we had a very different process and we've built something that really no one else can offer at this point, but it was us orchestrating everything that was happening. And whereas like earned media, it's someone else that's orchestrating the message and they're interviewing us. And that's a unique position to be in. And so then to repurpose that content and use it on social media to amplify the reach can make a huge difference. And it's made a huge impact in our business. And it's one area where we were really weak. We were really strong in terms of marketing, but it was our messaging for everything. That's an area where I think people listening could probably grow, you know, whether you're a leader inside an organization or you own your own company, having others talk about you is a really powerful thing.
I have someone at the company who handles media for me because if we can't be out there saying everyone should do this and then you Google us and you find nothing about us.
Right.
I was recently in the local business journal.
Amazing article.
It was fantastic, really fun.
Yeah.
And I got to see what that's like because I've done TV, I've done some other things, but I haven't been in the business journal before. And I had two current clients cut out the article, send me lovely notes, one I've met, one I've never met, which was very thoughtful. I had several people send me emails or text messages, and we had some clients that had heard about us, or they were prospective. We didn't even know who they were, but they had heard about us and weren't sure, called us, and now are clients. So we've gotten business. It's certainly increased the credibility and authority of what we're talking about in our area. And then BizWomen, which is national, picked up that story. And now I'm getting national engagement. So this is what's happened from one interview. And that doesn't happen every time. For sure, it doesn't happen every time. But when it does, it's powerful.
It's really powerful. And if you don't have some sort of PR strategy, I would highly encourage talking to Media Mindfield, or if you don't have the budget for today, start to think about what that looks like, because I think PR is a really important part of building a brand. And I think about our company as a brand, but I also think about myself as a brand. Early on in leadership and leading this company, I thought about our company and I thought the company was my identity. And now they're two separate things. And so even if you're listening and you work for another company, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't have some sort of PR strategy and build some sort of personal brand.
Right. Exactly. Amen. It's important to know who you want. You're aspirational. What are you aspiring to be? What would it look like to get there? And I write some things down. There are some things that on my social media that I only post about things in certain buckets because that's really who I am and my authentic self, because people don't want all aspects of my life. But I have gotten some feedback. They're really interested in a few parts of my life, and that's what I can bring. And I know that whether this company, another company, public speaking, whatever it is, that's my public brand and it's not changing. Media Mindfield needs to have its own identity that certainly is always going to be in some way attached to me, but I want it to live outside of me. And so it needs to have a brand. I need to have a brand, and they should benefit each other.
Spot on. Thank you for being here. It's been fun to watch the growth of your business. You're an incredible human being, and your company is fortunate to have you leading the way because it's been fun to watch.
Thank you.
So last question, what advice would you give to your old self from where you are today?
Boy, that's a great question. Think bigger. And it isn't about numbers, and it isn't about money, and it isn't about people. If I could have written the vision of we are going to change an industry, this solution is needed because I believe news is powerful. I believe people have stories to tell, and I want to change this broken industry. Had I thought like that, boy, I could have saved myself a lot of heartache along the way. And I think I would have had more confidence in myself. And I also should have taken a look back at who I was before news, because in my mind, I was news reporter. Now what do I do? And if I can go before that, I was a seventh grader selling Avon lipstick to my friends in the locker room because I knew they needed it and I could make money off of it. I was someone who had lemonade stands and someone who sold jewelry. I mean, I did all these things and I was always inventing different things, and clearly most of them don't work. We've established I have lots of ideas, but I didn't take time to go back and respect all of that and realize that I could lead something bigger than mom sitting at the kitchen table. And there is nothing wrong with that. That just isn't my path.
Phenomenal advice. And I look back to the beginning for myself as well. There are so many clues along the way that we almost don't go back and digest those and look at those. And looking back now, I'm like, well, no wonder I wanted to be a teacher. No wonder I had that passion. No wonder I decided I wanted to be in real estate and be an entrepreneur. There's so many things along the way that you can look at. So that's great advice. If you loved this episode, please share this episode on social media. Leave us a 5-star review if we've earned it. Leave us some kind words. And then don't forget to subscribe if you love the content that we're providing. And if you have anything else or suggestions on speakers, you can go to behindthebillboard.com and let us know who else I should interview. I'd be so grateful. Thanks for tuning in to the Behind the Billboard podcast. And thank you, Christy Peel, for being here.
Thank you.
If you loved this episode, give us a great review, subscribe, and share us socially so we can spread the word and build a community of difference makers. And if there's a leader who inspires you, send your suggestions for future guests to Chris's team at behindthebillboard.com so we can get better.